Welcome to M&A Access, the official podcast of the Alliance of M&A Advisors. I'm Gina Galusha, and today I have with me Graham Bachman of Hidden River Strategic Capital. Welcome, Graham.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Of course. Glad you're here. So let's kick off with just a little bit of background about you. How'd you get into the M&A space? Where'd you start? Where are you now? How'd you get there?
Sure. And yeah, thanks again for having me. This has been a great conference so far as well. So
good. Been good. Love hearing that.
So my path to M&A, to private equity, is not traditional in the sense that I didn't go into investment banking right after college and then get an MBA and then the traditional path into private equity. I got my start in private capital markets about a decade ago. I joined a large asset manager, BDC fund asset manager, and that's sort of where I learned about private credit, private equity, formation of capital and doing deals, what it does for investors, et cetera, in the middle market more. And what really caught my interest there was less the actual function of how the investments perform for an individual's portfolio and from an investor perspective, but who was doing the deals, who was putting the capital together, because it was non-traded and it was unique, and I felt like there was a lot more differentiation within private credit and private equity. So I spent a lot of time figuring out how I can best take my personal skill set and bring it to private equity. And I was able to join a large single family office in Philadelphia who had a non-traded private credit platform that I was helping source deals for. And that sort of got me into the space originally.
Gotcha.
That's how I got to know the ecosystem here and ultimately how I ended up at Hidden River a few years ago when we got started.
Okay. I have a burning question.
All right.
Why is the river hidden?
All right, so there's two answers to why the river is
even
hidden.
Even better than one.
My personal favorite reason out of the two is there's two main rivers in Philadelphia. One's the Delaware River,
right,
and one is the Schuylkill River. Oh. Schuylkill is a Dutch word for hidden.
Oh,
hidden,
wow,
river. So that is what we are named after,
okay,
is the Schuylkill River. And the other slightly more cheesy answer to that question is we believe our structured capital investment strategy is a hidden river of opportunity that sits between private credit and private equity.
Both of those are good answers.
All right, I'll take it.
Okay, one more question.
All right.
Is the Schuylkill where the sculling happens?
The sculling?
Yeah, like the rowing.
Oh, rowing, yes. Yeah, where Boathouse Row is in Philadelphia is on the Schuylkill River.
It is. Yeah. Okay, that's one of my favorites. So I used to go to Philadelphia with my dad's from Philly, and we would drive in along that way to Philly and see that row, and I was like, that's just so cool.
Yeah.
Someday I'm going to row. How does your work differ from more traditional buyout strategies for private credit strategies?
Sure. So the way I explain our strategy relative to the traditional buyout private equity funds or growth equity funds on one hand, where you are mostly focused on investing in common equity, usually majority control or as much equity ownership as you can get in a deal. And on the other hand is private credit. And most private credit is focused on the sponsor finance or the providing of leverage in a leverage buyout to the private equity funds.
Mm-hmm.
Hidden River, we think, is sort of the sweet spot between those two strategies. So we have elements of both those strategies in our investment,
mm-hmm,
where we can make credit investments, loans, cash flow term loans, as well as equity investments in management-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. We don't look to take majority control of the companies we invest in. So we believe there's a world of management-owned companies that need capital for growth. Maybe they want a dividend recap of some kind or buy out an old existing shareholder. Or there's some sort of transaction where the capital they need is sort of above and beyond what makes sense from a debt perspective. But they don't really want to sell to a private equity firm and lose control of their company day to day. So how can we come in and create a structured capital hybrid solution where we can be both debt and equity providers and not sort of be the private equity overlord that they're afraid of?
Mm-hmm. So when you are looking at those potential investments, if they're management owned, then you're really kind of thinking through what is leadership, what is the kind of leadership we want to work with, and maybe a culture fit as well, or no?
The underwriting of the management team and who you're partnering with is arguably the most important part of the decision of whether or not to invest. Mm-hmm. You're right. We partner directly with the CEOs or the management teams of businesses. They continue to own and operate their companies. We are a capital provider and hopefully a value add resource to them. Mm-hmm. But yes, understanding who the CEO is, what their goals are, how to best align the structure of our capital and the goals and wants and needs of the business mm-hmm. is, and the ability for us to work together is sort of the fulcrum focus, I would say. Yeah.
And are you looking short-term, long-term, medium-term, forever and always?
I guess it depends how you define those time frames. It's not forever and always.
Okay.
We are a typical 10-year GPLP fund.
Okay.
So most of our investments we look to make over a 5 or 7 year time frame horizon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. And when you are evaluating the management, is that when you're also evaluating the time frame, or is that kind of a collaborative decision with them?
I guess it all sort of goes hand in hand. When you're in due diligence, you're doing a lot of things at once, but the best deals for us sort of start with a conversation. It's like getting to know who the business owner is, what they do, and what they're looking to accomplish mm-hmm. can influence what type of securities, what type of structure you put into the deal itself.
Right.
So we're very flexible. We've done deals where it's all debt and there's no equity investing, and we've done deals that are very equity oriented. So it really just depends on the nature of the transaction and the management team and what's best for the business and for the management team and CEO.
That sounds like fun discovery.
It's a good way to start the conversation with a blank piece of paper and, you know, what are you looking for? Because we are a little bit different from the majority of capital providers out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I bet they appreciate that too. So what is your approach to sourcing?
Well, because our strategy, again, is a little unique with this structured capital approach, sourcing is one of the hardest things that we do. Mm-hmm. The M&A environment is designed for just that. It's for mergers and acquisitions, where the majority control selling and buying of businesses is sort of how our entire ecosystem is set up. So when we're offering something slightly different than that, the world of investment banking is largely sell-side investment banks that engage with businesses who want to sell majority of their companies. And most of private credit is set up around the sponsor finance angle, providing the leverage for those buyouts. So where do you find the structured capital deals is a challenge. And that's what I spend all of my time doing, basically.
That's why you're here today.
That's why I'm here today. The lower middle market is highly fragmented. It's relationship oriented. There's imperfect data. There's not heavily picked over opportunities. So being sort of in the flow of deals and being top of mind for intermediaries, for other GP, other funds with slightly different strategies of ours is sort of the two main ways I go about trying to source deals.
Right. How many do you close a year?
The target is, you know, 4 or 5 deals a year.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And so for that, you probably need a pipeline of, I'm going to make a guess, don't make fun of me if I get it way off, like 60 to 100?
60 to 100 total deals we look at a year?
Yeah, like that are in your pipeline of conversations.
So the total number of deals at the very top of the funnel that we saw in 2025 is going to be north of 1,000.
I was way off.
The number of deals that were relevant enough to have a true conversation?
Right.
In the hundreds.
Okay.
And then from there, yeah, when I think about our funnel, we're not thematically driven, so we don't have like specific industries we focus mm-hmm. on. And we have such a wide outreach that the top of our funnel is very, very wide, but it narrows very, very quickly to try to fit our structured capital approach. So, yes, we've seen over 1,000 deals last year, but the amount of conversations that we're really consequential internally was probably closer to your guess of, you know, 50, 60, 70.
Okay.
So funnel starts wide but narrows rather quickly.
Okay. Yeah, we, in a previous life, I was in marketing and, you know, acquisition and conversion and engagement and that kind of thing. And the way we talked about it is, instead of thinking about it as a funnel, think about it as a mountain, because you've got to get up those kind of obstacles, and it gets narrower as you go. Not that they like all fall in and then some of them trickle out somewhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of them just fall off the mountain. So you have a pretty steep cliff in the beginning.
That's right.
So, okay. So how do you think about risk and return right now? Has anything changed in the current market, or is it kind of business as usual?
So I guess I'll answer that question from how we think about our risk-adjusted return profile of the investments we make. And one of the things that we think is really compelling about our investment strategy is the risk-adjusted return that we aim for. Mm-hmm. We have sort of leading our securities as this high attachment point, contractual coupon debt security that is attractive from a return perspective, not overly risky, and we also get some significant equity upside. So, and when we're not doing sponsor finance, I think we can get better terms, we can find really good optionality with the investments we make, and I think it's a better risk-adjusted return profile than traditional private equity or traditional private credit. Of course, I'm biased. From a market perspective, how I think funds and the general market are thinking about risk and return, you know, it kind of changed a lot throughout 2025. The first quarter, the new administration, tariffs and interest rates, and there's a lot of noise. So I think that's calmed down a lot. Interest rates are starting to drop. So I'm hopeful that there's more risk taking in the way of getting more deals done in 2026.
Was 2025 slower for y'all?
It was slower from a capital deployed perspective. We still saw a ton of deals. But as we talked about, the pipeline just narrowed extremely quickly. So there wasn't a ton of highly actionable opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Okay. And are there any trends you think are being underestimated or misunderstood right now?
Well, this is exactly what I try to educate the market on, is trends of structured capital and structure within deal making. We utilize warrants and preferred equity securities and structured capital within the broader capital stack. It's not just senior debt and common equity. We are, and that's trickling more and more, especially into the lower middle market. Business owners are beginning to understand more that there's more options out there than just calling their bank for a debt or selling their company to a private equity fund. Utilizing structured capital approaches helps align business owners and fund investors like us even more. As the lower middle market continues to understand structured capital as a asset class in and of itself, outside of just pure lending and pure equity, I think that trend's only going to continue. And hopefully Hidden River is sort of on the forefront of that.
Sounds like it.
I hope so.
Like you're getting in there.
I hope so.
So, what do you love most about the work that you do?
What
do you love most?
Oh, what do I love most? You know, I've always been very relationship-oriented, and throughout my career, I've trended from working at one of the largest banks in the world, beginning my career almost 20 years ago, to now working for an 8-person, small, lower-middle-market, structured capital fund. And to me, that's relationship-driven. Mm-hmm. It's opportunity within a highly fragmented and less efficient lower-middle-market. So being a part of that ecosystem is what I love most. I think there's room for generating really lasting personal relationships. And frankly, I think it's also providing a more attractive return for the risk you're taking opportunity in the markets as well, just with the lack of efficiency.
Yeah, let's unpack that. Because the beginning of what you were saying, I was being a little contrarian. I was like, well, all you know, industries, there's a relationship-based aspect to it, right? So what about this do you love?
What do I love about these relationships?
Is it because you're just a finance bro at heart and you love your finance bros and dudettes?
You know, you could certainly argue I'm a finance bro at heart, but I just think that when you are at the middle market or near the upper middle market, it's sharper elbowed. It's more binary. It's a win. Someone wins and someone loses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The ecosystem here of collaboration,
yes,
is unlike what I've experienced at other places. So I think hopefully that answers your question.
Absolutely, it does. That's what I love. That's what I love about these events, right? It's down to earth. People looking to win and collaborate to those wins.
Sure.
Yeah, I love it. Good people. Okay, so what keeps you, I mean, on that same kind of track, what keeps you motivated and engaged? Is it that collaborative environment and relationships, or is there more to that?
Well, like any good capitalist, I'm motivated by capital. Wouldn't be in this business. I think most of us wouldn't be in this business without that motivation. But look, like I said, we saw 1,000 deals last year, and we did less than 5. Hundreds of these deals I send to my friends in this industry to try to be collaborative, to constantly show up in market and continue to provide value for others around us. I think it makes all of us better and builds those lasting relationships that it should hopefully pay dividends for years and decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it should be kind of repeat collaborations.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure. For sure. Okay. We talked about probably this a little bit at the beginning, but how has your perspective on investing changed over time?
Again, my perspective really changed when I joined Hidden River 3 years ago. It was always something that I had noticed in the lower middle market, this lack of sort of flexible capital. But the trends that I've seen since coming to market, beginning to educate intermediaries and business owners alike, is how what we're offering, and we're not the only ones that do it, but how what we're offering is a little bit differentiated, and there's a real need for it. And so I continue to have strong conviction in the investment opportunity for structured capital. So the perspective of when I was younger in my career was private equity is the way to go. You buy a business, you lever it up, and you financially engineer an exit. And that's just not the case anymore with how efficient everything has gotten, how interest rates have changed the game a little bit over the last few years, and more unique, niche, thoughtful approaches to alternative capital structures is something I'm truly excited about.
Nice. Would you consider yourself like a structured capital nerd? Or enthusiast?
I'll go with enthusiast.
Not nerd.
You know, I'm not smart enough. I leave it to my partners to be to do the diving in deep on the security.
All right.
So
we won't tell them you call them nerds on this podcast.
I those are your words.
Yes, they are. I am fond of nerds. That's why I go that direction.
I am too. They're smarter than I am, and I'm a nerd in my own ways, but mm-hmm. I'm not smart enough to really dive deep into the nuances.
I doubt that. But we can agree to disagree. So you are active with AMAA at the local level in the Philly chapter.
Mm-hmm.
What do you find is different networking, right? Today you're networking at the national level.
Yes.
And then, you know, throughout the year at the Philly chapter, you're networking at the local level. What do you see as the differences there? Like, what is the value that's unique to a local community?
So I think that in the M&A community, things have moved up market, broadly speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the legacy networking groups have disenfranchised some of us in the lower middle market. And the community that we're able to build within Philadelphia, and I know other chapters within AM&AA around the country, I think provides a nice outlet for relationship building and collaboration for those of us that are doing small deals in and around the small deal community. So the group in Philadelphia is great, and we've had sort of 2 years now. I guess we founded the chapter 2 years ago after this conference in this hotel. So it's been a great first couple of years, and we continue to see traction in the growth of our membership and the attendance of our events.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we appreciate all that you do very much. Okay. So what advice would you recommend to, you know, people who are looking to make local connections, or AMA members who are looking to get more value out of those relationships? How would you suggest they go about that or approach it?
I think with relationship building, it's about being consistent, showing up, not only showing up, but also giving before you expect to get. I take that approach specifically with deal flow or suggesting just general networking connections. If you can make a name for yourself as someone that's recognized in the lower middle market, someone that you can ask a question of who has a well-networked sort of Rolodex, hopefully that pays dividends over time, because when you get into this business, there's no light switch that you can flick to increase your deal flow or find LPs or develop the relationships with like-minded funds or investment banks or service providers. It takes time, which I'm an impatient person. Trust me, my wife will tell you as much, but it really pays dividends to be consistent and to be visible and to give without expecting something immediate in return.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, what you said about having the deep Rolodex from a distance, that was my impression of why the Philly chapter did so well, was even though, you know, a lot of our chapters are founded by folks who are further along in their career, y'all who started it seem to really have deep relationship pockets and a lot of energy for where you were at in your career. So I would just second that. That's what I saw from afar.
For and sure. Ryan has done an amazing job, so he deserved to win Chapter Leader of the Year.
Yes, he did. He has. He's done an amazing job. So, what is one lesson that you've learned in the middle market M&A space that you think everyone should kind of take advantage of?
One lesson I've learned, I think it kind of goes back to exactly what we were just talking about. Relationship capital compounds just like fiscal capital. The more you invest in time and energy in your relationships, the more it's going to grow and compound exponentially over time. I believe in that truly, and I think the inefficiency of the lower middle market is ripe for that sort of behavior. And anyone that's coming in and wants to be a part of the community, it's, you know, dive in and help.
That was a good answer. I also love that you brought it back to investing. Well done. So looking ahead, what are you most optimistic about with the market? You see any good glimmers of hope in 2026?
I do, yeah. Q4 of 25, from a pipeline perspective and deal flow perspective, was very strong. The first couple weeks here in 2026, we continue to see a lot of new opportunities. So I think a more normalization of the macro environment is going to be helpful. The more comfortable decision makers and investors are with the backdrop of the economy, the more, you know, certain they can be in the investments they want to make. So I think from a macroeconomic perspective, there's a lot of things to be positive about. And then to talk about Hidden River strategy more, I think we're going to continue to see trends in nuanced structured capital taking more of a central role, where more people are willing to talk to business owners and clients about minority equity or preferred equity or structured capital solutions versus having to just sell.
Nice. Well, I look forward to it.
Me too.
Keep me up to date.
I'll be here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, Graham.
Thanks for having me.
It was a great conversation. I learned a lot.
Me too.
I hope you did too. And we're grateful you joined us. If you're looking to connect with Graham, you'll find him on LinkedIn. And
website, hiddenrivercap.com.
Go to a Philly chapter event and see him there. So thank you for joining us. And thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.